Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago. If you can't listen live, always podcast the show, download it. You can even listen to it on the internet. You can listen to it on Facebook. You can listen to it on LinkedIn and some of the other social networking sites. This show is always available. Once it is recorded, it's over, it's done, it's yours. What can I tell you? And folks, this is Super Tuesday. Are we all in awe of Super Tuesday? No. Absolutely not. At least I'm not. I couldn't care 2 cents about some of these crazy people, you know, especially on the Republican side of the aisle, you know. But everybody's going to be talking about this. I mean, you got 12 or 13 states in play. That's why it's called Super Tuesday, you know. So, you know, and everybody is already saying Donald Trump is going to sweep, Hillary Clinton is going to sweep, you know. And a challenge has already been turned down in federal court, I believe, challenging Ted Cruz's citizenship. But you know what? The judge didn't actually say if Cruz was a citizen or not. The guy who's filing this suit went about it the wrong damn way. So the judge threw it out. You know, but that's not dismissing Ted Cruz as not being a United States citizen. The Constitution is clear. You have to be a natural-born citizen. He was not a natural-born citizen, okay? He was born in Canada by a mother who was born in America. If you're born in Canada, you're not a natural-born citizen, even though your mother is an American citizen. But, you know, that's an argument for the courts. I honestly think, and a lot of other think tanks and smart people and intelligent people with law degrees and all this kind of stuff, believe that this man is not, he is nowhere near eligible to run for president of the United States. He knows it. I mean, if the shoe was on the other foot and Donald Trump was born in Canada and his mother was an American citizen, Cruz and what's his other guy named Rubio would be all over Donald Trump. Donald Trump has a right to be on Cruz's ass about not being a natural born citizen within the United States. The Constitution is clear. Now, he is not eligible. If he want to run for something, let him go back to Canada and run for something because he is a citizen there. He's going to come over here and run, become president of the United States and screw up this country? Give me a break. Go back and screw up your own damn country, Ted. Go to Canada. They're probably glad your ass is over here trying to screw things up. Well, anyway, 13 states, delegates are in the play. And, you know, I mean, okay, in Georgia, they're calling the race for Trump. All right, Hillary Clinton won 2. Bernie Sanders won Vermont, his home state. That was a no-brainer, okay? That was a no-brainer. They're calling this stuff right now as I'm sitting here on the air, and I'm, you know, as I'm listening, I'm informing you as I hear it, you know, so... But I really don't care about this, folks. Tonight on the show, it's dark outside. Here in Chicago, we have author Renata Marie, and we're going to be talking about things in the news, which we are talking about now. And anything goes. That means you can call in or listen. Anything goes that is within reason can be discussed on this show. The George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay, author Renata Marie is supposed to be here on the show. I have her on the marquee. You know, but you never can tell. You never know what's going to happen. You know, they come, they show up, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And, you know, we just have to deal with that. Things happen, you know. Things happen. Bad weather, you know, computer breaks down, phone breaks down, fire, whatever. And people, you know, who are booked and scheduled somehow do not show up. But some people actually forget. Well, George, I knew I was supposed to be on. I marked it down on the calendar, but I just forgot. People forget to be on the show. That's okay. It happens. On radio, I mean, television also. I mean, people forget that they've been booked and scheduled. And obviously, sometimes they don't show up. For guests for this show, I booked them and I asked them to be on the show. Sometimes a guest will contact me and say, George, can I be on your show? And I'll say, hey, wow, check them out. Check out whatever their book is or whatever they're offering. And if I like it, I'll say, hey, wow, yeah, you can be on the show. Then suddenly when it comes time for that person to be on the show, there's a no-show because the person either forgotten that he or she was supposed to be on the show or something unforeseen happened to cause them to not to be on the show. But I always tell people, if you're not going to be on the show after you have been scheduled, after I did all the work, the hard work to schedule you, at least you can call in and say, George, I can't make it. And if you can't make it, and if you let me know that you can't make it to the show, then I can always try and reschedule you for another time. But if you just blow the show off, you'll never be on it again. Period. All right, you're listening to George Wilder of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting out of Chicago, and this is Super Tuesday, folks. Wow, this is too super. I'm going to have to refresh this screen here because things are happening now as I speak on Super Tuesday. They're saying Donald Trump has won 2 states. They're saying Hillary Clinton has won also 2 states, and they're also saying that Bernie has won at least 1 state, his state of Vermont. But yet, Cruz has not won anything so far. Not that I hear. Not Cruz. And Marco Rubio hasn't won a damn thing either. So we have to stay tuned for that, folks. So, all right, David Duke is doubling down. Voting for Trump is the best thing we can do. David Duke, you probably heard of David Duke. This guy is a white supremacist. He's affiliated with the KKK, Ku Klux Klan, and these guys are endorsing Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has not actually denounced him. I think he has, but he took his own sweet time of doing it. So they're all in Donald Trump's ass about that. Mitch McConnell visits Obama to tell him that he is not going to confirm any court nominee for the Supreme Court that Obama picks. It doesn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat. These asshole Republicans are not going to do anything about the Supreme Court. These people are just crazy. They're nutty. Why do we put up with this crap in our United States Congress? We got these baffled-ass Republicans. And they just want to obstruct everything. And I'm so ticked off that Obama just doesn't have the strength to fight these guys, or he doesn't have the strength to try to bring people together. Even he himself have said that he's disappointed that he couldn't bring people together like we all wanted him to do. We didn't want him to, you know, keep giving out olive branches to the Republicans, and the Republicans keep on spitting in his face. That's what Obama's been doing for the longest. He just can't seem to leave these Republicans alone and start using his executive powers to get things done. I mean, look at Bruce Rauner. He's gonna wreck Illinois by using his executive powers or not acting at all on anything that needs to be acted upon in this state. I don't know. I don't know. Reminder, the FBI doesn't just want to get inside of a single iPhone. Of course, you've heard about this, Apple versus the FBI. The FBI wants to get into a terrorist iPhone to see, you know, I guess to find out who his contacts were. And Apple's saying no. But the FBI is saying that they just want to get in that particular phone. And Apple say, if we give you what you want, you'll be able to get into any phone out there messing around with the privacy customers. And they said, we're not going to do that. And this is right. I think this is totally right. I think that the FBI they don't want to just get in that one particular phone, terrorist phone. These guys want to know how to get in everybody's phone out here. And I think that's not right. I mean, when you buy a phone, you want your information in that phone kept private. It doesn't necessarily have to mean that you're doing something against the law or something is wrong. You just want your information kept quite private, like I do. I have all kinds of smartphones and cell phones. I don't want the FBI prying into my phones, especially if I haven't done anything. But these guys want to get into these phones, period. They keep saying, well, we just want to get in one phone, the terrorists, and we think that Apple is doing the Americas a disservice. I mean, these guys, they killed people. Yeah, and we're all in remorse for that. But please do not let these guys, the FBI, break into your phone, snoop around. Privacy, Americans' privacy has already been thrown the hell out the window. FBI really do want to get into our phones. And I don't think they should. I really don't think they should. Well, we're trying to their excuse is, well, we're trying to keep Americans safe. We're trying to keep find out how the terrorists are operating. You're the damn FBI. Figure some other way. You know, so how do you feel about that? How do you feel about that? I know I don't feel pretty good about it, having snooping around in my iPhone. When I didn't pay $200 or $300 for it, I want privacy. I want privacy. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. Arthur Renata Marie scheduled to be on the show, but you know, things happen. You know, she could drop by, she might phone, who knows? But stick around for that, folks. And you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I will be right back. Let me see if I can straighten some things out here on this screen for you people. I will be right back. Stay with me. right. I just got my voter registration card in the mail. Yeah, there's early voting happening right here in Illinois, but it's not for the the presidential nominee or anything like that. Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, not those people, but for state's attorney and the Illinois House of Representatives, the Illinois Senate. You know, so I've got that. I've been a registered voter for years. You know, so I've just got that. So I have to go down there and do my duty. I always vote. I will vote against the most popular candidate out there if I don't think that that person is sincere in what they're doing. Now, most of the candidates on the ballot in Illinois, they're rotten to the core. These people are just rotten to the damn core. I'm going to vote for the lesser of the evils. I mean, I didn't vote for Bruce Rauner. I think I had enough sense to not to vote for this guy because you can see what he's doing to the state now, but a lot of people did not have that kind of sense, voted for this creep, and now look what he's doing. He's destroying Illinois, and while he's blaming other people, he's blaming Michael Madigan for as if Michael Madigan is stopping him from doing his job when all he has to do is pass a damn budget. You know, and all kind of hell is happening in Illinois because of this guy. But I'm going to vote March 15th. We're also doing early voting in Illinois. I might vote early, get it over with. You know, so usually when I vote, I usually – not everybody I vote for wins. But the people who I do not vote for – wind up being the people I should have not voted for in the first place. I guess what I'm saying is that I'm pretty much right on the money because I can kind of – I remember I had a friend of mine. She used to always tell me, George, you don't talk much, if she can only hear that now. You don't talk much, but I can read you. I can read what kind of person you are. And I think that's what I do. I think I can read them. I think I can read through all the BS that they're talking. People who are – there are some people running for office in Illinois right now who are front runners. But I don't think – I listen to them. I see their campaign messages. I see their commercials on television. I read about them. And I hear them talking, their speeches. One of the things I don't like – about a politician, and I can tell really quickly if they're phonies or not. When they are being interviewed and they start dodging questions, that's a big turnoff for me. That is, I mean, when the moderator or the interviewer asks a politician, a certain politician, a direct question, and that politician begin him or her begin to answer those questions without answering it at all. They run in their mouth, but they're not answering the question. I don't like that. You're dodging, you're pivoting away from the question. Hillary Clinton is good at that. She is so damn good at not answering a direct question. She is so good, and she knows how to do it. She's a seasoned politician. She's been in the White House twice before when her husband Bill Clinton was president back in the 1990s. So she knows how to maneuver and be tactical in the things that she say. When you listen to her, when a question is asked of her, and she starts talking about this or that or that or this without answering the question, you think that maybe she's somewhere in all of that rhetoric that she probably answered the question, but she did not. That's one of the greatest things that turned me off about any politician, anybody running for office, anyone who's expecting to get my vote will not get it. If you can't answer a direct question that has been leveled at you, you do not deserve my vote. And I don't think Kim Fox, the state's attorney, deserves my vote. I've listened to her. I've seen her. She sounds like a typical politician. I know there's a lot of prominent people in Illinois who have endorsed her. There's a lot of other talk show hosts, radio shows, who have endorsed her. Newspapers have endorsed her. But she's just another typical politician. I've heard that she's lied about her credentials. That's possible because she hasn't said anything about being accused about lying about her credentials. So obviously it must be true. I cannot vote for her. Okay, I cannot do it, and I will not do it. Because I don't like candidates who are typical politicians and not answering a direct question. Kim Fox doesn't do either. She doesn't answer a direct question. This other woman who's running in Illinois, Stratton somebody, I've watched her. She's running against Ken Duncan. She does not answer a direct question. If you can't answer a direct question posed to you, especially by the American public, what the hell am I going to vote for you for? You're going to wind up being corrupt, thrown out, taking money, whatever it is, voting the wrong way. And I can't vote against Madigan because I think the guy that's running against Michael Madigan in the state of Illinois, he might be a Bruce Rauner plant. You never know. Politicians plant people. It's a dirty game, folks. It is a dirty, dirty game. Okay? And Michael Madigan is coming up. He's Mike Madigan, in case you don't know who he is. He's the, what you call those people when they're in the House of Representatives? He's the Speaker of the House in Illinois, and he's got a challenger. And think about Michael Madigan. Mike Madigan, he's been in politics. He's been in the Illinois House for 40 years, 40 damn years. And I think it's about time for him to go, actually. I mean, he's old and crusty. I think it's about time for Michael Madigan to give it up and go to Bermuda somewhere and live out his last days. He looks like he's about 85. You know, I mean, 40 years? Yeah, and all he's ever done, I mean, I don't know, maybe he's done something good. You know, he's a Democrat. You know, he's a good guy, but Rauner is in his ass. I mean, Bruce Rauner, the Republican governor of Illinois, is in Michael's. I mean, he's always blaming Michael Madigan for something. And Michael Madigan just sit there and just, you know, he just take it, you know. And that's why I try to tell Democrats, if Republicans are pounding your ass into the ground, you better start pounding them back. Because if you don't start pounding them back, whatever they're saying about you, the lies that they're telling on you, the things that they're trying to blame you for, it's going to stick. Politics totally is a dirty game. You have to fight fire with fire. You can't fight fire with nothing. Or you can't fight fire with gasoline. I mean, these guys are lying. Bruce Rauner is just lying on this guy. He's vilifying Michael Madigan. He's vilifying John Culleton. He's just vilifying these people. And we, the people of Illinois, we know who the real culprit is. The real culprit is Bruce Rauner. All he has to do is get a budget. The colleges and the universities are about to close down because the lack of funding. And he's blaming that on Michael Madigan. That has nothing to do with Michael Madigan. All he has to do is just sign in a budget. Hey, wow, that's over. But he doesn't want to do that. Bruce Rauner and his minions, his flunkies, his ass kissers, are all in about around trying to ruin this state. And you don't blame whatever is going on in Illinois. It is not the fault of Michael Madigan. Michael Madigan is not the governor of Illinois. Bruce Rauner is the governor. So whatever is not right, he is going to take the fall. He's just stopped trying to – he's vilifying Michael Madigan and John Culleton. You can't work with people like that. You can't compromise. You're supposed to compromise and work together to get things done for the people of the state. You can't go around talking about people like you're a thug. Mike, I'm pretty sure Michael Madigan and John Culleton, they probably hate Bruce Rauner's guts and don't really want to work with him. He cannot approach people in a thuggish manner and expect for them to give him what he wants. It ain't gonna happen. Now, ain't that a groove? It is not going to happen. Bruce Brown, I've said from day one, this guy doesn't know anything about government. He forgets that he's a, or maybe he doesn't give a damn about being a public figure. It's just awful what's going on here in Illinois. People are hurting. People are, he tries to act like he cares so much about public schools. If he cared so much about public schools, if he cared so much about the children in public schools and their education, he would have had a budget months ago. We are going into our ninth month without a budget. And these assholes, these politicians in Chicago are just sitting there and doing nothing about it. This is why Michael Madigan has a challenger. But I'm skeptical of his challenger. His challenger is young. He's bright. He seems like he's talented. From my understanding, the guy had a has got a criminal record somewhere. But what my understanding is, he may be a Bruce Rauner, a Governor Bruce Rauner's plant. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm saying allegedly, maybe it's possible. I don't know. I've been hearing inklings about that. We'll have to find out about that in the days to come. All right, let's get back to Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday, Donald Trump. They saying that Donald Trump is going to sweep everything. You know, by the time I get off the air tonight, I should have a lot of the concrete results by tomorrow. I'm on tomorrow. I hope you guys join me for that too. And as I've stated earlier in the show, author Winona Maria is scheduled to be on the show. Let's see what happens. Okay, let me refresh this page here because I want to make sure that we're getting the latest updates on this Super Tuesday deal. It should be fun. It should be really, really fun. And the evening news, national news is covering this stuff wall to wall. So I figured if they're covering it, I probably should talk about some of it also. Okay? All right. March Mayhem. 13 states up for grabs. Trump, Georgia, Rubio, and Donald close in on Vermont. Clinton, Vermont, Georgia, Sanders. Okay, all right. They're saying that Trump won. Let's see if we can get some specifics on this. Because there's somehow there are some news that's coming in. GOP Judgment Day, Rubio advisor preps donors for a dismal night. Oh, wow. They're saying Rubio is probably won't win anything. So my thinking is if Marco Rubio doesn't win any of these Super Tuesday states for the president of the United States, I think he should drop out. And also, I think Ben Carson should go. And I think John Kasich should go. There's no doubt about it. Trump is going to be the nominee. And the Republicans, I'm going to tell you something, the Republicans, they don't want Donald Trump. They can't stand Donald Trump. Like I said yesterday on the show, some of the Republicans are saying that they're going to break off and to keep Donald Trump out of the White House, they're going to vote for Hillary or Bernie or not vote at all. They do not want Trump. They do not like Donald Trump. They don't. But Donald Trump, hey, wow, Donald Trump is a winner. There is no doubt about it. The man is a winner. I mean, I think he's a buffoon. I think he's bullish, and I think he is obnoxious. I don't think he's presidential. I don't care. So, okay, here's some live results. Super Tuesday. Hillary Clinton has been said to be the winner of two states. Sanders wins Vermont. Okay, Trump. Okay, the statistics, the numbers are still waiting to come in on the Republican side. Okay, so, you know, so none of this is really set in stone yet. We should have the full results at least by 7 o'clock, at least by 7 o'clock. But it looks like it's going to be Clinton. It's going to be the runaway winner in two states. Okay, all righty. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. I'm looking at a screen here, folks. And for the Republicans, you got Trump, Cruz, Rubio, Kasich, and Carson. Now, Carson should drop his ass out. You know, nobody's not even paying attention to Carson anymore. Kasich should be on his way out. Rubio should be on his way out. You know, so, because this is crucial. Everybody has won something except for, I believe, Kasich and Rubio. I don't think Kasich has won anything. He could have, but there's no doubt about it. Rubio hasn't won a damn thing. He hasn't won any caucus state. And a lot of people are saying he's not going to be winning any Super Tuesday states either. But, you know, that remains to be seen. Okay, exit polls. 6 in 10 GOP voters support Muslims ban. Okay, they want the Muslims out. So if 6 in 10 GOP voters support Muslims ban, more likely these people who are support a ban on Muslims. More likely, these people who are supporting a ban on Muslims are going to vote for Donald Trump. Cruz pressures Rubio and Carson. Okay, I'm assuming this means that Ted Cruz is pressuring Rubio and Carson to get out of the race because he wants to make it a two-man race with him and Donald Trump. I do think that Carson and Kasich should get out of the race. They are way down there. And I keep asking people on my social networking sites, why is Carson still in the race? And some people say, well, he still has money to spend. You know, he still has campaign money that he has to spend. That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, he's not going to be president. No way in the world he's going to be president. He's at the bottom of the stack. He's just there. I mean, when he's on the debate stage with the Republicans, I mean, you barely notice that Ben Carson is standing up there beside them. The moderator barely calls on this guy. But I'm thinking that Cruz is sticking around. I'm thinking that Cruz is sticking around because Carson is sticking around because he wants book deals. He wants a job on Fox News. He's hanging around to get his name solidified in the American cement, so to speak. So when this is all over, we all will know who Ben Carson is, regardless. For years to come, we'll know who Ben Carson is, even if he, you know, his books he's going to write, the crazy speeches he's going to be traveling around America, giving to colleges and universities and other places, think tanks. He may even get a job on Fox News, but he will never be president of the United States. Neither with Kasich, neither with Rubio, and neither with Cruz. Trump is going to take this, and Republicans are up in arms about this, about Trump. I'm going to tell you something, even though they're talking about Trump and the KKK, I'd rather see Donald Trump, win this thing outright, be nominated, than to see Cruz or Rubio, because I think both of them are more dangerous than Cruz. I mean, than Trump. Cruz and Rubio are more dangerous than Trump. I don't want to see Cruz as president of the United States. He will wreck this country. Rubio will wreck this country. Well, I'm not going to even talk about Ben Carson because he ain't got a chance in hell. So, you know, we're just hanging out here until we get some more results in on this, what they call it, Super Tuesday. Oh, wow. Give me a break. A bunch of crazies, especially on the Republican side of the aisle. Donald Trump, You know, I thought Donald Trump would get better as he go along in this thing, but this guy has gotten so bad. He has gotten so worse. He has lost it totally. Totally. All righty. This is March 1st. You know, so February is gone. You know, February is not around anymore. I mean, Black history is history. What can I say? And I'm having fun here. I'm having fun here. Folks, my guest is Winona Maria, and it looks as though she may not be showing up, but that's okay. I can always do the show alone. So you got me, George Wilder Jr., alone. In case she doesn't show up, I mean, there's still time, but I'm thinking that she's late, but who knows? Who knows? So you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of Chicago. Follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm on Amazon.com. My work is all there, and it's good. It's great. It's awesome. Check that stuff out, Amazon.com. And I will be right back, folks. Let me see if I can't find a break here. Okay, how to get more book reviews. In case you're an author and you're out there, you're listening, listen to this. It might help you out.
All right, welcome to the show. Our guest today is Heather Hart. She is an international best-selling author and award-winning author, and she works as an author coach at trainingauthors.com. She enjoys working from home, where she spends her days typing away at her computer, brainstorming new marketing ideas, and encouraging other authors to achieve success. So, Heather, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about your background. And yeah, cool. So, I mean, what inspired you to start out as an author? Because I know lots of people have the idea to write a book, but they never really, you know, get around to it.
I actually just kind of fell into it, and this doesn't happen to a lot of authors, but I had twins, and that caused me to have four children under 5 years old. So I couldn't afford daycare to work outside the home, so I started volunteering with someone else who already wrote books, and we co-authored our first book, and that just kind of got the ball rolling. And I was a published author before I really even knew what I was doing.
Yeah, awesome. So you had that kind of that relationship with someone that really spurred you on and encouraged you to get it out there.
Definitely.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Well, I know today on the show we want to talk about how to get awesome reviews for people's books on Amazon and, you know, Goodreads and places like that. So tell us, you know, some of your awesome tips on how to get more book reviews.
The best thing that I've ever found to get book reviews is to start a dedicated email list for book reviewers. So you can email them out whenever you have a new book, and then they can respond if they want a free review copy of that book. That is the best way that I have found to get them. As soon as we started our list, it really just transformed the number of reviews we were getting on our books.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So how did you set that whole process up, and what tools were you using? How did you let people know about the opportunity?
Well, by the time we started getting reviews for our books, or started trying to get reviews for our books, we already had a really big following. So all we had to do was send out one email saying, hey, if you'd like to be on our reviewer list, you know, you can apply here. And we just had them sign up for essentially a second email list that we started that was dedicated to reviewers. And we outlined the process really well. What we did was we said, you know, if you'd like a free review copy, you have to agree to review it on Amazon and Goodreads. And if you have a blog, you can review it there as well. And they have to do the FTC disclaimer saying that they got a free copy in exchange for an honest review. And then we just send them a free ebook copy.
Cool. So they sign up basically on your website for the email list. And then, you know, they're just on that list waiting until you release a new book. And then you say, hey, we're coming out with a new book. And, you know, as a reviewer, you get it for free. And they have to, like, respond back and say, yes, we want it, and then you send it out, or how's that work?
Yep, that's exactly how it works. So they respond saying, yes, I'd like a copy of this book. And sometimes we ask them, you know, do you want a free Smashwords copy? Do you want us to send you a PDF or Mobi file? You know, how would you like to receive this book? And then they'll let us know what kind of file they want, and we send it to them that way. And we just say, you know, this is our time frame. You know, please post your review before our launch on this date or within 2 to 4 weeks or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, that's a great tip to send them. Make sure you send them the file that they want, because I know I've done things with reviewers before, and I've sent people a PDF, and they're like, no, I want the Mobi, I want the EPUB, I want, you know, some other file. And so, yeah, I mean, if they're not going to read the book or read it as quickly and review it as quickly if you don't give them the file that they really want.
Exactly. I'm on several review programs like this for traditional publishers, and they usually offer ebook or print books. And they always say on theirs what type of file it is. And if you want to get reviews before the book goes out, like before it's actually published, you can say, you know, this is an advanced review copy and label it that way so that they know not to judge you for all the spelling errors or the plot problems that you're still working out, so you can get reviews coming in before your book is actually ready to go out.
Oh, cool. So, okay, so you guys are also doing this for books, like, even before they're done and finally edited. So you're sending them out, like, maybe, you know, several drafts in, you're sending out an advanced review copy to get feedback.
We usually do it right before our final stage. You know, we'll send it out, and we usually send it out to reviewers and our last proofreader at the same time. That way, they're all coming through at the same time, and we're ready at the launch date.
Gotcha. Cool. So then how do people, because people can't review the book until it's launched, right? So do you say, hey, write the review before, or do you just, once it's launched, you tell them, hey, go write the review now?
If we send it out before it's available on Amazon, we say we'll send you a link when it's ready on, usually on this day. We tell them what it's going to be. However, I have in the past published the Kindle ebook on Amazon and just labeled it as an advanced review copy, so people know not to buy it. I don't like doing that very often, and usually not for more than a few days. Like, if I think it's almost ready and I want the reviews to start coming in, you can do that. But you can also publish it on Amazon, the final version, once it is ready, before you actually launch the book. Like, we often publish our books on Amazon 2 weeks before the official launch. So the book is the final copy. It's ready to be read by people. If somebody does buy it, it's not a huge deal. But we're not ready to start marketing it yet. So you can publish it before you're ready to actually launch the book.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, so that's a great idea. So you're basically publishing it on Amazon and say, hey, reviewers, go review it real quick. And then, you know, a week or 2 weeks later, you start the actual launch where you're doing all your marketing promotions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. So what kind of marketing promotions are you guys using? Are you using KP Select? Are you publishing everywhere?
It depends on the book. A lot of our books are just in KDP Select because we want to use the free days or the countdown deals.
Yeah.
But we also do a lot of them that are on everywhere. So we usually publish those through Amazon directly, and then we'll publish them through Smashwords, which will put them on Barnes & Noble and iTunes and all those places. But it also gives us the opportunity to use those Smashwords coupons so we can send our reviewers a free coupon to review the book.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cool. Cool. So for your email list, what are you guys using? Are you using MailChimp or something else?
We use TrafficWave. And the reason we do that is because it's a one set fee. You just pay like $19 to $20 per month, no matter how big your list gets, no matter how many subscribers you get, no matter how many emails you send out. It's still just that one set fee. A lot of the other ones pay you per subscriber, per email. And the more your list grows, the more expensive that gets for you. And the more lists you have, the more expensive that gets for you. So that's what we have chosen to use for now.
Cool. That's cool. I've never actually heard of that one, so I'll just check that out. Traffic Wave. So we'll link to that under the show, in the show notes.
All right.
Cool. So what other awesome tips for reviewers? I mean, that's a great way to do it. That sounds like a really awesome strategy, and I think a lot of authors aren't using that, so they should. But what else? For someone starting out without a platform, without a following, you know, what could they do to start generating more reviews?
Definitely. There are several little things that authors can do that can help generate reviews. If you have an email list at all, you can just email out saying, hey, if you have read this book, would you mind leaving a review on Amazon and include the link? You can put a little snippet in the back of your book saying, you know, if you read it on a Kindle, when you scroll through to the very end, it will say, would you like to review this book on Amazon? But a lot of readers don't get all the way through. They stop at the end of actual book content. They don't read the back matter to get to that prompting from Amazon. So you can add in a little snippet saying, if you like this book, would you review it on Amazon and include a link? And sometimes that will remind them to go all the way through and write a review, or they can just click the link and go right there. And you can also put that in paperback books. So if somebody's reading the paperback book, it's a tangible reminder to them saying, you know, hey, go review this book for me.
Cool, cool. And so you put that snippet like immediately after the last chapter of the book, so it's not at the end?
Exactly. That way they see it as soon as they finish reading the book.
Yeah, that's really smart. So it's like the last chapter, the last word of the last chapter, next page says, hey, if you love this book, leave a review. And then it's like the about the author section and that kind of stuff at the end.
Yep, exactly.
Cool. That's really smart. I've never actually seen anyone do it that way. That sounds like, know, definitely a way to get a little bit more people doing it, because like you said, yeah, sometimes they read the last word and they just, you know, they don't want to read your bio.
They're done. So that's really helped increase our reviews. You can also post, there are dedicated groups on Facebook and LinkedIn where readers want free review copies. So you can check those out and find groups that are either genre specific or even just general groups in general, where you can post that saying, hey, if you'd like a free copy of my book in exchange for an honest review, just let me know. Or if you are in the KDB Select program, you can post to those groups on your free days and let them know they get a free copy and that you'd love to have a review from them.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so maybe you can share after the show, you can send us a link to some of the best Facebook groups and LinkedIn groups you found for authors, and you can share that out as well.
Definitely. I actually have a page on my website where you can go after our interview. It's called trainingauthors.com/Heather Stead, and I'll have all the links that I mentioned during this, or all the tools and resources that I've mentioned during this podcast.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks. Cool. So what about friends and family? Because I know a lot of people, you know, if you don't know anyone, you don't have a following yet, a lot of people think, oh, I should go email my friends and family for reviews. What do you think about that?
I think that's generally a bad idea, because the friends and family they're biased, honestly. And Amazon actually has a review policy saying that the author cannot review the book and nobody can review the book on behalf of the author. And when you ask your friends and family to do it, they're doing it as a favor to you, not as a reader giving an unbiased review. So that can actually violate Amazon's terms of service. It's very, very sketchy, and I don't recommend that at all.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Good tip. Yeah, and I found too, it also kind of like, you know, most people's family members, they don't really want to read your book, and they're, like you said, they're not really a reader of your book, so they don't really care. Like, you know, they're not going to know if it's a good science fiction novel or not, because they don't read that kind of stuff. So, like you said, it's not really the kind of review that's going to cause people to actually want to buy your book anyway.
Definitely. And oftentimes, if you have a family member that wrote, oh, so-and-so is so sweet, I'm so glad she published this book, and it's not about the book at all, it's about the author or whatever. Or, you know, I've known so-and-so since they were a little boy, and, you know, it's not, readers just look at those and kind of roll their eyes. It's not going to encourage anyone to read your book. It's just going to be like, that's a worthless review. You know, you need to have reviews from credible people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so what about, I mean, sometimes you get a review and someone leaves a review, it's like one word, like good book or something like that. Is there anything that you do to train your reviewers to leave better reviews or more detailed reviews or more comprehensive reviews?
Sometimes we ask them to share what they liked best about the book or something they learned during the book, because we write nonfiction primarily. If you write fiction, you can ask them, you know, hey, in your review, could you mention who your favorite character was? You can ask them, prompt them what to leave in their review, and that can kind of help a little bit. But in general, there's really no way. You can't tell them what to write, so it kind of gets into, again, a sketchy territory. Amazon does have a rule where they have to leave so many words. You can't just say good book on Amazon. You can on Goodreads, but on Amazon, you have to have like a minimum of 25 words, and that kind of usually helps out a little bit. But again, it's totally up to the reviewer as to what they write. Now, what you can do is you can go to the Amazon top reviewers and find a reviewer there that reads books in your niche that writes really good reviews and contact them about reviewing your book. Just make sure that it is an author who reads your genre. You know, you don't want to contact someone who primarily reads romance and ask them to review a horror story. It's just not good. I've had several people contact me and say, you know, hey, would you review my book? You're going to love it. It's about this. And I'm like, ew, why would I ever want to read that? Why would anyone want to read that? You know, so it's just because people have different tastes. So make sure that you're contacting someone that will like to read your book. Otherwise, it's just kind of like spam mail.
Definitely. You know, that's such a great point. And I think it's true universally, like not just on Amazon. I mean, on Facebook and on Twitter and anywhere. Like, you don't want to just ask like your friends and family or other authors who don't read your work to come and like your fan page and follow you on Twitter and leave you a review, because it's not your audience, and they're going to use different words and different language than your audience would use. And so, you know, like if like you mentioned, kind of like the romance novel, like if you have a romance novel published and all your reviewers are saying things that no romance reader would ever say in their reviews, then when your real true romance reader fans come and read them, they're going to be like, well, something's not right here. And they might not, you know, logically know what it is, consciously know what it is, but they're going to feel kind of, you know, this isn't really the right book for me.
It can also also lead to negative reviews, because I know that I've gotten some review copies of books where the book was not at all what I was expecting. And I was like, it's not really my reading style. I didn't really like this book because it's not what I wanted. It's not what I read. You know, that can lead to negative reviews for your part. So definitely make sure that you're sending review copies to people within your target audience.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a good idea. So, I mean, what do you do, though, even if you do send out, you know, books to people and they leave you one-star reviews or bad reviews? How do you deal with that?
I usually just let it go. Every good book has a negative review, and every reader is entitled to their opinion. You know, if it's an unfair review, you can contact Amazon or report it as abuse, but it has to be unfair. If they're reviewing, well, it didn't get here in time, or I don't like ebooks and this was a Kindle book and I wanted to print, or something like that, Amazon will delete those for you because they're inappropriate. However, if it's just a negative book because they didn't like your story, just leave it. I have actually personally bought a book based off of somebody else's negative review. Everything that they hated about the book is exactly what I was looking for. So based off of that one-star review, I bought the book. So just because you have a one-star review doesn't mean you're a bad author. It means that somebody with a different taste read your book. So I just leave them alone and ignore them. And I generally don't ask them to review books for me again, though.
Yeah, so you quietly take them off your reviewers list.
Generally, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's great advice. You know, it can be so hard sometimes if you know, as an author, we especially if it's your first book, it's like, you know, you feel like it's your baby, it's my baby, and I don't want anyone to criticize it. But, you know, like you said, every great book has bad reviews. And I love to look at, you know, Harry Potter, you know, it's got like over 100 one-star reviews. And so I look at that and I think, well, if I've only got 5 one-star reviews, I need, you know, I've got a little ways to go to get up there, you know.
Exactly. And back in the old days, when people had to query the traditional publishers, they got rejected all the time. In famous books, the Chicken Soup for the Soul books got rejected by like 15 publishers. It was crazy. Just because somebody doesn't like your book doesn't mean it's a bad book. It could be a bestseller. It's just that one person didn't like them. So I usually, like I said, just let them go. Sometimes I like to read through the negative reviews to see if there's anything I could improve. You know, like if they're saying, well, there was a typo here, you know, you can fix that. Make your book better. If it's constructive criticism, one review can be great. One-star reviews can be great. It's just you've got to look at what they are. Maybe that person was just having a bad day and they bashed everything about you. Those you just kind of have to blow off. You know, go and read some of the 5-star reviews and let them go.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, do you do anything looking at other people's reviews? So I know
the George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. This is the talk of our times. The talk of our times.
Okay. All right. It's great.
All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you enjoyed that little bit about how to get book reviews, because I'm an author myself, and I realize there's a lot of authors out there who write and they get published, but they can't get a review. I mean, getting a book review is like pulling teeth. It's just tough. I've had people all over the world, probably all over everywhere, download my books, but not one would leave a book review. I guess it's something people just don't do. And then sometimes you have to ask them to leave a review, and then sometimes you ask them, they still won't leave a review. But, you know, you don't want to bug people too much about reviews, because if you bug them too much, they'll go there and try to they'll leave you a nasty review. So we just have to hang in there. Book reviews are tough to get, and you can buy them, but a lot of people do buy them, and that's not right. And I'm also a book reviewer, and I will never, ever charge anybody for me to give them a review on their book. Furthermore, I'm not going to review a book that is a possibility I do not like. I'm not going to review that book. Before I review a book, I'm going to make sure that I like it, because I like giving out positive reviews. I like giving people positive feedback on the things that I write, because we are authors and we have to support each other. There's a lot of people out there that will not support us for whatever reason there is, but we got to find people who will support us. Because once somebody supports you for something you do, it's such an awesome feeling. It encourages you to keep going, keep doing it, because it's something you love. Because it's so easy for so many people to try to give up on doing something they love if they don't get any support behind it. So give a writer support. If you know writers, if you know an author, if you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, and I mean, support these groups, support your authors. Because I'm going to say this. A lot of authors are broke. I mean, it's true. Writing is no get-rich scheme. It is not. You do it because you love it. There are some people I have once told that I was a writer. They looked down at me like I was garbage. So you do it because you like doing it. But we all writers, and we need support to help us to keep going, to help us to keep writing, to help us to keep being motivated. We have to be motivated, because I love being a writer. I love being a radio host. And the reason why I'm still writing, the reason why I'm still a radio host, because of you out there, because of your positive feedback, even if it's negative feedback, I will check that negative feedback, make some changes, and I will thank you for giving it to me. Because even if it's negative support, negative feedback, it can still turn out to be something positive. So I'm saying to everyone out there, if you are a reader, if you are an author, if you are a writer, whatever you do, support each other. Because we know what it takes and we know what it's all about to be a struggling author, a struggling writer. And like I said before, just got through saying, it's like pulling teeth to get a review, to get one damn simple review. I mean, I've had free books offered on my Facebook page. People have downloaded my free books 1,000 times, but not one of these damn people, I'm sorry, excuse me, not one of these fine folks left me a review. But they've downloaded my and my articles and my essays. However, not one, and I'm not the only one. I mean, it's a lot of authors out there. So support a writer, support an author. You know, I mean, it goes a long way, because when you're supporting an author, you're supporting somebody at what they're doing. It allows them to keep on doing what they're doing, and it allows them to keep bringing you great, great work. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago. It's beautiful. It is Super Tuesday night. 12 or 13 states are up in the running here. Donald Trump seems to sweep. I believe Hillary Clinton is going to sweep too. So everybody's talking about Super Tuesday. Everybody's talking about it. And Donald Trump is such a buffoon and a bully, but he's going to walk away with it. The Republicans don't like it, but I don't think it's nothing they can do. So some of the results are in. Some will be trickling in as the night goes on. So that's it. 347-857-1762. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for archiving the show. Thank you for always listening. Thank you for your input, your feedback, and all of that kind of stuff. I just love it. I just love it. All righty. Here we go. Let's go to the telephone to see. Hello, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Welcome.
Thank you. This is Tracy Sue.
All right. All right. Didn't I get an email saying that you canceled or something?
We never got a response back. So I'm actually planning to caucus for Hillary Clinton in just a few minutes. But since we didn't get a response, I didn't want to leave you hanging. Hello?
Hello? Okay, tell us about yourself. I'm here.
Well,
tell us about yourself.
Tracy. I'm Tracy Sue, and I am the author of Soul vs. Ego Smackdown and The Year of Yes. And I'm a spiritual business and life coach, and I have a publishing company. So I get what you're talking about with the author thing and how difficult it is to sell books and get a review.
Oh, of course. And Tracy, I'm very sorry. I have you here on my schedule. I think you rescheduled at some point.
My understanding is that we rescheduled for today. But if this is a bad time, we can arrange something.
No,
later.
No, no, it's fine. It's okay. It's fine. I mean, you're here, so you might as well do the show. Go ahead.
Okay. So, I have a publishing company, and I support writers in writing and publishing their soul purpose books. And I just feel strongly that every time you feel a pull from your soul, then you should answer that and publish the book, whether you get a traditional publisher or any kind of other hybrid publishing platform, or whether you have readers or not already. I think it's just so important to do that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So how many books have you written so far? Personally,
I have written 11.
11?
11.
Good God.
I have written
11
books. And, so, go ahead.
I was going to say, which one do you want to talk about?
Well, you know what? I just wrote one called Soul vs. Ego Smackdown, How to Say Yes to Your Soul and Tell Your Ego to Suck It. And I'd like to talk about that one because I think it relates to what you were talking about before, which is how to get support when you have this voice in your head that says you're not good enough, nobody's going to read this, people only want to take it from you and they don't want to pay you for it or leave a review, that sort of thing. That's your ego. And in this book, it's basically a handbook that tells you how to tell when it's your soul's voice and how to tell when it's your ego's voice, and why you should even listen to your soul's voice. What does your soul want? What does your ego want? And the book is it's not very short. It's like 200 pages long, and it's very simple to understand, very modern today language. I'm a spiritual and business life coach, so it basically answers all of the questions that my clients ask me.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to read you some?
Yeah, if you have an excerpt, go right ahead.
All right, great. So this this chapter is called Resistance is Futile. That voice, your soul, is never, ever going to shut up and leave you alone. You can run from it. You can hide. You can tell it to screw off and stop trying to ruin your life. You can distract yourself. You can stay in the swamp of busyness. You can stick your tongue out at it and say, nanny, nanny, boo-boo. You can confront it with spreadsheets. You can try to reason with it. You can demand that it justify itself with good reasons. You can take pills or drink alcohol to dull the sound of it. You can even bliss out on organic marijuana and pretend you're being enlightened by being zoned out. You can pop antidepressants hoping that voice is some form of temporary insanity. You can move hoping for a geographical cure. You can blame it on your spouse or your parents or your kids. You can go from one job to another chasing the latest fad for a dollar. You can bind yourself to a religion that won't approve. You can insist on knowing the outcome before you do it. You can pester around with it, but insist on perfection before you produce. You can hide in atheism and adamantly insist that you're just a ball of atoms. You can shield yourself with cynicism and sarcasm, but it won't work. Your soul is eternal, and it came here with something that it needs to do, and it's not ever going to give up on you or shut up about it. Your soul's voice can be a sweet, encouraging melody, or it can be like nails on a chalkboard that drives you to insanity. You decide which one it will be by whether you surrender to or resist what it's asking of you. The choice is really yours. Nonetheless, your purpose is your purpose, and you're stuck with it. You can live with it, or you cannot. Still, only one path leads to happiness and contentment.
Wow, that sounds great. You're a good reader. That sounds wonderful.
Thank you.
I mean, it does. It sounds great, and it's great information, and I think people should, check it out and adhere to some of that information that you're offering. It's great. When you write a book, do you actually put some of your do you add some of your experiences into what you're writing in order to help others out there?
Always. Always. Mm-hmm. The book before this one was called The Year of Yes, What If You Said Yes to Your Soul for 1 Year. And I wrote that as a personal diary, basically, that I then published. So it's extremely personal. In this book, mm-hmm. it's less so, but it is still very personal because I think one of the most holy phrases there is me too. And so many of us walk around thinking we're the only ones who have an ego telling us we don't have enough time or money or we're not good enough. And the truth is that every single one of us has that voice. It's just a matter of whether you're listening more to that or you're listening more to your soul or if you're just looking fear in the face and doing it anyway.
Okay, suppose you're a writer and you have so many people, instead of a voice in your head, you have so many people, even family members at some time, just a few maybe, telling you that writing is just not where it's at. It's just not something you should do or just not something you're good at. How would you motivate that person to keep on writing when all those negative voices are around her and not in her head?
Yeah, I call them the outside voices. Right? And everyone in your life has an agenda for you. Even if they love you, even if they want what they think is best for you, even if they want to see you be happy, they have an agenda for how that should happen for you. But your soul knows what you should be doing. And that
exactly.
trumps any other outside voices, no matter what. So you really just have to stand up and do it. Like, my parents were not super awesomely crazy about the idea that I was going to be a writer because that's just a ridiculous thing to do. But I've made a living at it for 20 years.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've told people, you know what? I'm going to say this, if I can jump in. I had a job once, and I think I had published at least 2 books. I was working at this social work agency. And published 2 books, and I've taken them to work with me to show my coworkers. And my picture was on the back of the book. My name was on the front, and then there was the title. And I was just going around showing everybody my book because I wanted everybody to know that I was a published writer. And this one person I came up on, which will remain nameless, I gave her the book, and I said, I'm the writer. That's me. That's me, the book. You know, she didn't believe it. She didn't believe that I was the writer of the book. And it was my picture there. It was my name, the title. But it was a couple of people refused to believe that I wrote the book. You're lying, George. This is not you.
You know, I have an interesting experience being a writer or saying that I'm a writer as well. I think a lot of people think of writers as way out there somewhere who do their work and then you never meet them or talk to them and they're not really normal people. It's kind of an odd thing, but I mean, I have siblings who have never read a single word that I've written. And, you know, they just
don't understand it. Do not talk about sisters and brothers, please. I mean, they are some of my most non-supporters. Believe me, you know.
Well, as I said, everyone has an agenda for your life, and you're not meeting their agenda.
Go ahead.
Well, you're just not meeting their agenda, right? George should be doing this, this, and this, and that's what will make George happy, and that's what will make George okay. And everyone has. Right? Everyone in your entire life, even if it's well-intended, has that. I mean, of course I know that my parents love me, but that doesn't mean that they don't think it's crazy that I've committed my life to living by the word when there are so many better ways to make a living.
Don't you think that if people do not support you, people are not on board with what you're doing, people are all, even if it's your relatives or your friends, if they're not on board with what you're doing, do you think you ought to keep those people around?
Well, sure, I'm not going to abandon my parents, right? I'm just going to continue doing
I'm not saying abandon them. I'm just saying, in a way, keep on doing what you're doing and do not let the voices like that get in your way. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you that I got a divorce about 3.5 years ago. One of the primary reasons that we were unhappily married was because I wasn't doing what he wanted me to do for a profession. And he thought that being a writer was an insane, unrealistic delusion, he called it. And he wanted me to quit doing that and go get a customer service job. And we fought about it for 12 years until finally it was over. And then I was like, here's what I'm doing with my life, what I said I was going to do. When I married him, I was a writer. So I don't know why he thought that I was just going to, I don't know, grow up, I guess. But I didn't.
I don't know.
And I still make a living at it.
Yeah. But you make a living at it, but it's so hard for other writers to make a living at it. Just like I just got through talking about some.
Go ahead.
Just like I got through talking about it, sometimes it's very, very hard to get even a single review. So a lot of people do not make a living at it. And a lot of people have to work at other jobs in order to support themselves as writers. And, you know,
well,
sometimes
I'm not against that, but I've always insisted on writing for a living. Now, that doesn't mean that I have written only books or nonfiction or in a book format for a living. I have written blogs. I have written newsletters. I have written marketing copy. I have written websites. I have written advertising slogans. I have written sales letter after sales letter after sales letter after letter. I have worked for magazines and publications and newspapers. I have written for 20 years in a variety of ways. But every time I am working as a writer doing something that's not the glamorous part of it, and maybe it's the craptastic piece of it, it still makes me a better writer. Because I'm still playing with words, and I'm still putting in the 10,000 hours. So there are a lot of writing jobs out there that, they're hard work. I hire writers to write blogs for my clients in the marketing into my company. And I got to tell you, once writers find out that it's actually work, they quit. Because they have a very glamorous idea of what being a writer should be like. They want to make it in one specific genre. They only want to write about this and not that. But if you're a professional writer, any and all writing hones your skills, makes you better, teaches you something new, and hopefully, no matter what you're writing, you can get into a flow state in which you're feeling really good because you're using your craft.
I mean, I tell people that if they love to write, write. You know, just don't let anybody stop you. Don't let anybody hold you back. Like you do, you write in just about every genre there is. I mean, you are a writer, maybe a freelance writer at some point. But I always tell people, keep writing, be motivated, stay writing. I mean, nobody's going to be an overnight success. You know, that's unrealistic in some areas. But a lot of people, I write because I love doing it. I love the craft. For me, it's therapeutic. I don't know. It just makes me feel good.
Sure, yeah.
And I write, and also I write because it's a lot of fun. I have fun doing it. And even though it's hard work, it's rewarding. Because when I'm published, I get all this positive feedback from what I've, and that means so much. Keeps me going, review or no review, you know. So that's what keeps me going. And I tell people, if you love to write, like there's types of writing that I don't do. Okay, I only do fiction. I can't do every kind of writing out there. I can't interview every book. Every author with a book out there, because it may not be the type of book that I am experienced in. Or because when I review an author, I want to make sure that that person has a book that I can, if that person comes on the show, that we can talk about together. Okay? So mm-hmm. those are the kinds of books I like to read and talk. I'm also an avid reader. I think you have to be, before you can be a good writer, you have to be a reader. And I always tell
my
son that.
I read every day of my life something. Yeah. I have usually a couple of books rotating through. I read every day of my life. And what I'm doing when I'm reading is not just absorbing information or following a fun story, but I'm learning from craft. How did they use that sentence? What was the wordplay? How are they doing white space? Where's the book design piece of this? And what's working and what's not? Like, as a writer, you need to be constantly learning more
exactly.
And more about your craft. And how
right.
other people are experimenting with that is both fascinating and informative. And it culminates into this much bigger, more beautiful, broader skill set that you need to have as a writer, as if you want to improve. Like, I mean, I've met people who write but they don't read, and I don't understand that at all.
How is that possible?
Well, why do you even want to write if you have no respect for the written word?
Exactly. I mean, if I knew somebody who was a writer but didn't read, I would not want to read that person's book or whatever. You know.
No, I mean. It's study. I mean, when you're reading, you're studying. If you're a writer, you're studying craft.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's important to continue to study craft. Like a guy doesn't graduate from, you know, engineering school and then never learn anything else about engineering again. No, that guy would be
yeah.
unemployed in half a heartbeat because it moves so fast. Well, so does the written word. I mean, so does the English language. It's a very complex, nuanced thing that can be extraordinarily creative. But you have to be learning all the time to make it so.
Exactly. And the more you write, a lot of people don't even know this, the more you write, the better you're going to get at it. The better it's going to become.
Heck yeah. You are going to get better at it. And that's why I've always insisted that my work, whatever it is about writing. You know, whether that's newspaper writing or freelance writing or writing for companies or, you know, doing advertising copy, whatever. It's all wordplay. And the more hours you put behind your craft, no matter what it is that you are doing, I mean, think about the talent it takes to make processed chicken sound like a health food for mothers. I mean, that is a exercise in creativity, you know.
You're exactly right. Yeah. Wow. Hey, Tracy, is there anything else you want to tell us about the, you know, what you do and how you do it? Is there anything else you want to say that you haven't said already?
Sure, I'd love to. So as I mentioned, I have a publishing company. It's called Sue Inc., and it is an incredible resource for writers because as I was looking to publish my book, The Year of Yes, I was looking at the publishing landscape and realized that all of my choices sucked. Like, traditional publishing sucks because it takes so long to get it on the shelves. You're not making any money, and you've already spent a ton of money to build a platform. And I just didn't think it was a good deal. And I've self-published and traditional published before. And what I didn't like about self-publishing was when you go straight through CreateSpace, you don't actually get to have contact with your editor or your designer. There's a project manager that you have to go through. And so there's really no creative back and forth that I think a good editing is. So basically it just amounts to proofreading. So what I decided to do was launch a publishing company that had everything that I wanted as an author. So you get to keep your own copyright. You don't have to give that away to the publisher. You get to keep your own profits. You don't have to give that away to the publisher and an agent. You get professional design and editing, and those are very collaborative, creative experiences. You can position your book so that it helps your own career as an author or whatever it is you do for a profession, and books can really add credibility to your profession. So that's called Sioux Inc., and it's SIOUXINK.com. Mm-hmm. And okay. I would love to talk to any writers out there who are just so excited about their work, but they're intimidated by the publishing process, or they're feeling yeah. shut out of it by traditional publishing. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. it's my passion to help people live their soul's purpose, and I deeply, greatly respect the written word and literary genre and books, and I mean, I love it. It's my passion.
Me too.
It's been a great love affair my whole life.
I love it too. I love it. I love it. I really do love it, or I wouldn't do it if I did not. You know, I would not do something that I you have to love it if you're going to keep doing it. You really do.
Agreed.
So tell everybody where they can find your books and where they can find you.
Well, my books are on many online retailers in a couple of stores, but Amazon.com is probably the easiest way to find them. My website
yes.
is TracySioux.com. That's TracySioux.com. And I have a podcast on iTunes. It's called Year of Yes Radio.
Oh, wow, great. Okay.
Yeah, and I also have...
Maybe I can come on your show sometime, huh?
I would love that. I would love to have you on my show. We'll get Hannah to book a date for us.
Great, fine.
I would love for people to friend me on my personal Facebook page because I really like to interact with the people, and you can't really do mm-hmm. that from a business page. So it's just Tracy Sioux, and if you try to friend me, I will approve you.
I'm going to go there.
Interact, and it'll be awesome.
Okay. All right, Tracy, thank you for being on the show, and come back, all right?
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It was a great time.
Bye-bye. Tracy Salk on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I will be right back, ladies and gentlemen. That was fun. That was totally fun. You know what? She wasn't the guest that I was expecting, but hey, wow, she stood right in there. Let me see what we got. I'm going on down. All right. Be right back, folks. Stay with me. March mayhem. Looks like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Super Tuesday. This crap, believe me. They're saying that Bernie Sanders has taken Vermont. Now, as you people know, as you guys know, you girls out there, you know that I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. I mean, I really am a Bernie Sanders supporter. It just Hillary Clinton irks me. But if she gets the nomination, we have to vote, people. We have to vote for the Democrat. I don't think nobody out there beyond my voice, at least I haven't heard of or know about, that's going to put Donald Trump in office. The Republicans don't even like him. His own party don't even want him. They're trying to figure out a way to get him out, but it ain't going to happen. Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee. That's no problem with it. It's going to happen. Okay, this is Super Tuesday, and 12 or 13 states are in play. And I think Hillary's won two, Bernie's won one, I believe. We'll know more later on tonight after I get out. I'll bring some more about this on the next show, which is tomorrow. I believe Trump has won two. Maybe Cruz has won one. I'm not sure, but we're going to have to live results. Okay. Delegates. Clinton has 175 delegates. So far, Sanders, 71 delegates. Wow. Clinton has won Alabama, Georgia, Texas. Whoa. She's just knocking the hell out of Bernie Sanders. And Trump has won Alabama, Georgia. He's won Texas, four states. Cruz has won nothing so far. This guy is done. So as I speak here, someone says 90 seconds into my ears. As I sit here on this Super Tuesday day, Clinton and Trump trounced. They have totally trounced. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here. I want to thank my guest, Tracy Selk, for being on the show. She will be back. I will send her hopefully send her a link of this show so she can put it on her website so that her fans and friends can enjoy her work. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank everybody for tuning in. Thank everybody for buying my book, downloading my book, listening to this show, archiving this show, and being great, great, great listeners and great, great guests. Okay, I'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care. Bye-bye.